This is Sunday Magazine, and with me on the phone this morning, I'm pleased to have once again Dr. Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center. Dr. Gabriel, thanks for joining me on Sunday Magazine.
Thank you.
Today you wanted to talk about the war on cancer and the fact that there are actually some areas of the war that are being won. I think it's not news that we hear a whole lot, but good news is always good to hear.
Indeed. We need to give some good news sometimes, and the war on cancer, there is no doubt we're winning it. It's not winning. It's you win by winning battles here and there, and ultimately you win the war. And this year, there is a government agency called SEER, S-E-E-R, which is the Surveillance, Epidemiology, and End Result. This is a U.S. government-funded agency that tracks the incidence of cancer in the country for the last 50, 60 years. And it's very accurate. It gives good estimates or good numbers, actually, about the incidence of various cancers. And every year, they update us. And by the way, that information is all available online for those who are interested in going to see. It's S-E-E-R. You Google it and you find it. This year, about 3-4 weeks ago, the SEER released the data on the number of cancer cases in the U.S., categorized by the site of the disease, by the gender, by the race. And by the way, SEER does that. So if you want to know how many cases of breast cancer there are in Hispanic women in the U.S., you get that number exactly, and you get the trends. How many or what's the incidence of, let's say, lung cancer in women in the U.S.?
So you can look up the
you will get that.
So you can look up the breakdown of just about anything.
Exactly, break it down to everything, which is very nice. So this year we had some little good news. The incidence of most cancers actually is on the decline, which is remarkable. And John, remember, in mathematical models, we say cancer is a function of age, meaning the older you grow, the higher is the risk of getting cancer.
Okay.
I sometimes joke with patients and tell them, you're lucky that you didn't die from something else and you lived enough to develop cancer.
Right.
And that's important because Americans are living longer. The average lifespan of American male is 70, 74 years, 75 years. The average lifespan of American women is about 79 years. So normally you would expect maybe there would be a constant rise in the incidence of cancer, especially breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, because the section of the society that's getting older is on the rise.
So if we're living to be older and we just tend to get cancer more often when we are older,
exactly.
You would expect it to go up, but it's not.
If you go and break down, you will see more cancers in people above the age of 65, but the number of people above the age of 65 is increasing. So that segment is, but you look at the rate, like the number of specific cancer for every 10,000 people in an age group, that's showing decline in lung cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, and prostate cancer. Most other cancers seem to be stable, but there are two rare cancers that are still on the rise.
And what are those two?
Those two are primary brain tumors. We call them glioblastoma multiforme. That's one. The other one is primary liver cancer. We call it hepatocellular carcinoma. Now, John, this should not be confused with liver cancer. There are people who say, well, my uncle had liver cancer. Most of those liver cancers are actually cancer starting somewhere else and metastasizing or spreading to the liver.
Okay.
No, those we don't call them liver cancer. We call them like lung cancer that metastasized to the liver, or we call it breast cancer that spread to the liver. The one that I'm talking about that's on the rise is cancer that actually starts in the liver. Now, why is that increasing? That's kind of still an enigma, but I think we have some hints. That if you look at what causes hepatocellular carcinoma, The main causes are people who drink a lot. I mean, drink a lot, that they end up developing liver cirrhosis or liver disease. Many of them end up developing this disease, hepatoma. People who have hepatitis C, which is a chronic virus infection usually transmitted through blood transfusion from the old days. In the old days, before we know hepatitis C, we used to call it non-A, non-B, because we didn't know C, right? And that disease, especially those people who are infected, and especially if they drink to an excess, it kind of it compounded their risk of developing hepatoma. Now, there is good news on the horizon. The cases of hepatitis C will have to decline with time. Why? Because most of the cases we see now are acquired more than two decades ago, when we didn't have the testing to identify hepatitis C virus in the donated blood.
So what we're seeing with the, in some instances, at least with this liver cancer, was set in motion decades ago, and we may be on the path to lowering the rate of that as well.
I think so. Now, there is hepatitis B, and that's a major problem in Southeast Asia. And immigrants from that part of the world, about one in third, are infected with hepatitis B. That one is harder to control because that's used to be transmitted through blood transfusion, but not anymore because we have detected, we are able to detect this virus in the blood for the last 30, 40 years. The problem with that B is transmitted through drug abuse, through heterosexual or homosexual transmission. And that will continue to be a problem. Of course, we have vaccines for that, but I don't think the vaccine effect has taken effect yet on the incidence of hepatoma. Now, we're still fighting hepatoma as a disease, but ultimately, prevention is better than cure. And the prevention would be those who, in my opinion, those who have hepatitis C, they really should never drink, and they should get the hepatitis C treated. Second, I think anybody who has a genetic predilection or predisposition to develop cancer, those people should avoid things that increase the risk of cancer. So, for example, in fact, I have a friend who went through this family history of cancer. He had colon cancer, and then in his youth, he drank more than his share, and now he has hepatoma. We cured him of lung cancer, of colon cancer. Now he has the hepatoma. Why? Because drinking alone increased the risk. But if you have a family history of any cancer, your genetic makeup is set up and susceptible to more dramatic injury to the DNA from the things that cause cancer. That
makes
sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. It seems to me that cancer, in the similarity to some other diseases, is a combination of genetic factors and behaviors, or, you know, things we can do to decrease our risk. And like you're saying, if you're genetically predisposed to, you know, be more at risk, it would make sense to pay even more attention to those things that you can do to change your risk.
Well said, exactly. And that's why I always say, prevention or methods of cancer prevention probably have more dramatic effect in those people who are predisposed genetically than those who are not.
Interesting.
The other cancer that's on the rise also is the primary brain tumor. Again, these are tumors, rare, that start in the brain. They are not the ones that spread to the brain. Now, the most common cancers of the brain are spread from outside, usually from lung cancer, breast cancer, lymphoma. But we're talking about here about tumors or cancers like the ones that the late Senator Ted Kennedy had, glioblastoma multiforme, serious deadly disease, difficult to treat, and that's on the rise. We don't know why, but of course, there are some people who say the power lines do that. Some people say the cell phones do that. Fact is, we really don't know what causes it. All we know, it's on the rise. And again, there is a lot of research that's been done to treat this disease. We need to understand more about it before we have methods to prevent it, like the method I described when we want to prevent things like liver cancer.
Okay. So still a lot of
research. The good news is breast cancer is on the decline. It's really amazing when you look at the curves, how the breast cancer incidence, which is number of cases in every 100,000 people, that is on the decline for the last 3-4 years.
Why do you think some of that decline is, both in breast cancer and some of these other cancers?
Very good question. Just a minute ago, John, you said we are seeing, when you talk about liver cancer, hepatoma, we are seeing the aftermath of 20 years ago effect of transmitting hepatitis C, right?
Exactly.
And since we stopped that now, or 20 years ago, we will start seeing the decline gradually. Now, when you go to the breast cancer, if you remember, before 10 years ago, we always were confused about, do birth control pills cause cancer or do they not? Do they cause cancer? Finally, 10 years ago, we had unquestionable, conclusive study that showed that women who take birth control pills or hormone replacement therapy, which is the same pill, have high risk of developing breast cancer. That was 10 years ago.
10 years ago, and did anything change then after that came out?
Yes. Patients are becoming more cautious.
Interesting.
Doctors are becoming more cautious that taking birth control pills does increase your risk of developing breast cancer. And thanks to the media, that study was publicized. Of course, the media doesn't always say what was right. When we had the debate about the coverage for the birth control pills through the ACA Obamacare.
Right. I don't remember that part of or that side effect of birth control pills being brought up during that debate.
No, the only person who mentioned it, I listened on the radio, was Rush Limbaugh. When he mentioned about the clots and the cancer and all that. The good news is the public are aware. And I remember one thing, the public doesn't always listen to politicians, right? We still do what we think is right. If we listen to politicians, we'll be in trouble. So the politicians are talking about, yeah, we need to cover this. I'm sure there are people who need the hormone pills, but we're becoming much more cautious in how often we prescribe them and for how long. And I think that is the main reason why breast cancer is on the decline.
Wow, that's very interesting. I guess I was not aware that the use of birth control pills had gone down after that research 10 years ago, but that's very interesting.
Very much so. We're becoming, in fact, now you have to press hard on the physicians to give you the hormone pill when you have hot flashes, when you go through, well, not you, it's
right.
Only for women,
right.
When you go through menopause, because you have to explain again. And definitely, I am very cautious in those who have family history of cancer.
Absolutely. Well, like we talked about, the combination of you got the high risk and the behavior that's linked, it's, you know.
Exactly. Now, the other one that also has this, we call it the time lag effect, or lead time bias, you can call it, is lung cancer. The incidence of lung cancer is, again, in the decline, especially in men.
And it does seem to me that, here's just a guess, but it seems like smoking declined, 10, 20 years ago.
Exactly. And in fact, the campaign against smoking is going on. Like when we have all these laws passed in various states, definitely those laws did affect not only how many people smoke, but even how much they smoke. So even those who smoke now, they really have to go through the hassle getting out. And look at the window here. I see that from upstairs where people who are in our building, they have to get out there at 0 degrees temperature outside to smoke a cigarette. That's not a very enjoyable thing to do.
Right.
So the number of cigarettes people are smoking is declining.
Even if just as many people are smoking, they're smoking less is what you're saying.
Exactly. There's no doubt the number of people are smoking. Unfortunately, there is some evidence now that teenagers are still smoking more. And women also are still smoking. In fact, I believe the number of lung cancer cases in women is still on the slight rise. But with time, I think we will see decline. And John, while we're talking about this, there's another subject I have written about twice in the papers, and that is marijuana. People think that marijuana, the general public think that marijuana is something nice, you know, for nausea, for blah, blah, stuff like that.
Right.
People forget one thing, that marijuana actually is a carcinogen.
Just like tobacco or the, you know, just like smoking
cigarettes.
I have
never seen a single patient who is below the age of 50 who has lung cancer who did not smoke marijuana and cigarettes at the same time.
Wow. Wow. Never seen one below 50 without having done both.
The combination. When I hear about marijuana use in high school up to 70%, that can offset some of the gains we are making on lung cancer.
Absolutely. I suppose that sort of has to concern you going forward. Like you said, the number of lung cancer is down at this point, but we really don't see the effect of these behaviors till 20 years later.
Exactly. It takes about 20 years to show an effect. Another example is asbestosis. You know, you hear all these commercials on TV about lawyers suing for asbestosis. Asbestosis causes two cancers. It causes mesothelioma and it causes lung cancer. In fact, asbestosis causes more lung cancer than mesothelioma. But we think about mesothelioma more because mesothelioma will disappear from the face of Earth if the asbestos exposure is completely eliminated, which we did.
Right.
But it takes 25 years for the asbestos fibers to cause cancer. Meaning, 10, 15 years from now, we will probably cease seeing asbestosis. I mean, mesothelioma.
Yeah, it'll go away because asbestos will be
that
gone for so long.
That disease will belong to the archives and museums of medicine.
You know, it's got to kind of, I guess it's kind of got to be hard as a doctor to, I would think, to get this message out to people just because the delay in cause and effect is so long. You know, you have a combination of you as a doctor and other doctors, then you've got the media that you have to go through. It's almost amazing to me that the message gets out there and people pay enough attention to actually do some good, but apparently it is working in some cases.
It is working, but you're right. When you talk to young people about the bad habits, they say, oh, my gosh, let me live another 20 years and then I'll deal with it then.
Right, right.
Or some of them will say, well, I'm sure medicine will be advanced so much that they will take care of those problems then. Fact of the matter is we have to try to live healthier. The incidence of colon cancer is declining, and I think part of that or most of that is because of the routine colonoscopy.
Okay. Okay.
I encourage everybody to have colonoscopy at the age of 50 and on after that maybe every 10 years depending if there are polyps or not. Remember, John, colonoscopy actually, if done on a regular basis, in my opinion, it can lower colon cancer by more than 90%. Why? Because every single colon cancer, almost every single colon cancer, starts in a polyp. So if you see the polyp and you remove it, that's a home run.
Yeah, you're catching it before it ever can become cancer.
So I hope some insurance executives are listening to me. They need to pay for colonoscopies without any argument.
There you go.
And especially after the age of 50, but for those who have family history of cancer, maybe they need to start sooner than that.
Okay. Again, like, you know, with a higher genetic risk, there's maybe you need to take more things into consideration.
Yes, and for screening purposes, I think it's important we do that. In addition to be more careful in preventing things like we think that constipation causes colon cancer. So those who have family history, maybe they should be the ones who will be eating more healthy diet, high fiber, stuff like that, to minimize their risk even more.
There you go. Dr. Nash Gabriel, it's been really an informative discussion and an encouraging one to know that a lot of these cancers are declining, but it sounds like something we definitely need to keep up our vigilance in terms of researching, you know, connections and just working on prevention, because it's something that, as we talked about with smoking, that I guess it could go in the other direction pretty easily if we aren't working on getting those prevention messages out there.
Wouldn't it be nice if one day we don't have cancer centers and we don't have cancer doctors?
I'm
like
sure
in the old days we had tuberculosis hospitals, and the sanitariums and the tuberculosis doctors. By the way, we don't have those guys anymore, right?
There you go.
Instead of me practicing oncology, be on the golf course in Arizona or in Florida every day?
That would be excellent. And I'm sure that it's got to be kind of funny as a cancer doctor, but you definitely hope that you basically work yourself out of a job.
Absolutely.
That would be great.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's something else I can do.
I'm sure there is.
All right, John.
Okay, thanks again for your time this morning, Dr. Gabriel. We'll look forward to talking with you again sometime.
Thank you.